Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMZ's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm a tired Alan Shartok. The Ebola scare has reached a fever pitch. Customs and health officials at airports in Washington, Chicago, Atlanta, and Newark will take the temperatures of passengers from three West African countries starting Thursday. A World Health Organization official said today that up to 10,000 new cases of Ebola could be seen worldwide each week within 2 months. That's scary stuff, even though now that a nurse at a Dallas hospital has fallen ill with Ebola after treating a Liberian patient who has since died. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are briefing hospitals in the United States as we speak on how to recognize and treat potential Ebola patients. Are we prepared for this? In the studio today is Karine Deuce, assistant professor at the Center for Immunology and Microbial Disease at Albany Medical College. She teaches infectious disease pathology and can help shed some light on what the hospitals are facing with Ebola. What do you think of how the government and the hospitals have handled things since Ebola came to the United States? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. I said 1-800-348-2551. You can also get us in touch with us online at WAMC.org. And we'd love to have you join in the conversation. After all, that's why they call it the Vox Pop. Well, Karine, assistant professor, soon to become associate professor at the in your field, your distinguished field at the University of Nevada, right?
No, actually, it's Touro University.
Touro University. Yep. I'm so sorry about that. And it has one of the largest, if not the largest, medical facilities schools in the country.
Well, I don't know about the country, but definitely in Nevada.
I can tell you, I'm really tired. I knew that, and you're very kind. Okay, so with that in mind, you have some fears that you told me about when it comes to what's coming up as the flu season hits.
Yeah, so the initial symptoms of flu are very similar to what you would expect with an Ebola virus infection. And so I'm hoping that most people will, A, go get their flu shots, and B, realize that it is flu season, and that if you're not exposed to somebody from West Africa, you're very, very unlikely to get Ebola. So you more than likely have the flu.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that we as a society have to decide is how much attention we're going to pay to this. I've had several calls saying, stop being an alarmist. On the other hand, you see what happens once it gets started, and it can really be quite ugly. I would not want to be working in personally, I know this, I shouldn't say it, but I wouldn't want to be working in a hospital emergency room right now. You've really got to be very careful, don't you?
Yes, you do. But you do, actually, with most infectious diseases. So, you know, flu can be just as deadly, especially if you're over 65.
I am.
As Ebola, really. And, you know, 30,000 to 36,000 people die every year in the U.S. of influenza.
Yeah.
So the likelihood of that many people dying of Ebola, even if we have a few cases here, is pretty unlikely. The people in the emergency rooms are well-versed on what they need to do in terms of infection control.
Yeah.
And,
let me ask you, how do you get this disease?
Well, as everybody has been hearing in the news, you are exposed directly to patient fluids. Somebody who has the virus and is symptomatic, and that means that they could be having diarrhea, they could be vomiting, they could be bleeding from several orifices. They are actually going to be...
Don't worry about it.
You would, if you come in contact with somebody like that, then you have a very good chance of coming down with the disease.
And yet we're hearing about dogs and whether dogs can transmit this. And we're hearing about somebody got it and we don't know how she got it, because apparently there wasn't any way that we saw she could get it.
About the nurse.
So there's the department of what don't we know?
We don't know a lot, quite frankly. You know, only a few labs in our country have been studying Ebola, because it isn't something that we ever thought we'd have to really worry about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there isn't a lot of money in studying a disease that nobody expected to come to this
country. Well, you study these viral stuff and you teach it. So is there anything sort of special about Ebola that we should know?
Well, it is actually a very interesting virus. And nobody knows a whole lot about it other than when it infects humans and primates, because it will also infect non-human primates and cause a very similar disease. Then it gets very bad. The natural host is not actually well studied.
Okay, we'll go to Phil. Here we go to Phil. 1-800-348-2551. Phil, you're on with the professor. Go.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello. Phil?
Uh-oh. Hello?
Hello?
Are you there, Phil?
Hello?
Hello? Are you there?
Hello?
Okay, so I don't think Phil is with us. Let's go to Mark in Copaic. Mark in Copaic, how are things in one of my favorite towns?
Good afternoon, Dr. Chartok. I just wanted to make a quick point. When I was 19 years old, I backpacked through most of the UK and parts of northern Scotland, and that was at the height of the hoof and mouth, the bovine brain deterioration disease time frame. And I recall coming back on the plane from London Heathrow into JFK. There was a line or two on the bottom of the customs slip where you would fill in which parts you traveled throughout the UK. And I had my hiking boots on that I'd worn throughout the trip. And they were kind of really before TSA, but the customs agents were almost ready to seize my hiking boots and anything else, clothing that might have been exposed to mud or dirt, thinking that it would spread hoof and mouth disease to cattle populations or you know, in the United States. And I'm thinking that this is a very similar thing where, you know, there's a reaction to a very potentially dangerous disease. And I think in terms of isolating it, from where it comes from, I think more measures should be taken, because there's a very small percentage of people traveling to and from these countries back and forth from the United States to impact countries with Ebola. And I'm
okay, we get Mark, we get the drift. Let's go to Professor Deuce, Professor.
So the likelihood of actually bringing Ebola back with you from those countries is fairly small, unless of course you're infected yourself. This is what's called an enveloped virus, so it has a little bit of lipid membrane around it that keeps it from drying out, that it actually steals from the cell that it infects, and then it buds out of that cell.
Explain that a little bit more.
So when a virus, many viruses bud out of the infected cell where they're generated, if they're enveloped viruses, they will take a little bit of that cell membrane along with them as they bud out of the cell, the outer lipid coating that covers and protects all our cells. And these viruses that are enveloped, they really need those envelopes. And so they're very, very susceptible to other things that you might suspect lipids are susceptible to, fats. So washing your hands is going to kill that virus.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The same thing for things like HIV. Those viruses tend not to be very stable in the environment. So you actually have to get them when they're still encapsulated in some kind of fluid or another, and they're still healthy, and their little lipid envelope hasn't dried out.
Along the lines of what Mark has said, the question is, what do you think offhand might be some of the preventive measures, taking people's boots away, or in this case, you would think not, based on what you just said, right?
No, you wouldn't need to worry about clothing unless they had been, you know, vomited upon by an infected individual. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I just to pose another quick question, I know there's plenty of other people on the line, but
exactly.
We're talking about an incubation period of between, from what I understand, 7 to 21 days. So if at somebody's outset of coming back into the country and they have this skin temperature scanner and things like that, I mean, clearly we've seen that that's not effective in terms of the time frame of when, depending on the individual, when it might incubate or actually grow to a...
Mark, very good point. Now, what would you... I want to go to you now and ask you this question since you're the guest now. What would you do? Assuming that that's so, and therefore we really can't, we really can't always just get anybody's temperature, what would you do?
Well, seeing as how this is a small group of or population in terms of travelers on a specific aircraft or anything like that. I would, depending on where they're coming from, and we know if a person has traveled to certain countries that actually have this active Ebola.
Okay. So what would you do?
It's very small population of people. It wouldn't really infringe on anyone's rights. I would quarantine everybody for the week to 2 or 3 weeks to make sure that they actually not.
Well, how do you know it? No, but your point was very well taken, Mark. But how do you know it? In other words, if they don't have any temperature and they don't tell you they've come into contact with somebody, how could you stop it from coming over here?
Well, we don't, but we have to assume that if people who are going to visit a family member in some of these countries or who are going, who may have had contact by maybe helping somebody out, move a sick family member or a sick family friend or something, I think it might be a reasonable assumption to say whoever's coming from these Sierra Leone and these other countries into the airports in this country, JFK, Newark.
Okay, Mark, we got it. My answer to that would be, okay, and I guarantee you if it spreads to this country, you're going to see it. No travel between certain countries.
So be it. I mean, it's unfortunate, and I actually have a very close relationship with someone who was going to another country in the Caribbean that, obviously the cholera during that time when it was a problem.
Okay, Mark, I wish I had time, but we are dead up against a break. We have to take it. Zach, the engineer, is staring daggers at me, and we got to let
much.
You go.
I appreciate
Thanks
it.
A lot. Okay.
Thank
okay,
you.
Zach, take it away.
Support comes from Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. Ashokan Center, presenting the Fall Family Fun Festival, music, crafts, apple cidering, face painting, a gorge walk with Bob Titus, and more. AshokanCenter.org. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. And Catholic Central High School, Troy, New York, a co-educational college preparatory school educating students grades 7 to 12, hosting an open house on Sunday, November 2nd at 1 p.m. cchstroy.org.
And Zach has brought us back. Zach back. Okay, let's go see if Phil from New York State can talk to us now and that his phone is in operating order. Phil, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go.
Well, two things. One, when the first story broke about the fellow that came into Texas, my father, who's a bit of a conspiracy theorist, at the time had stated that England and France were already preventing anyone traveling from those countries into coming in, and why, wasn't Obama doing this in the U.S.? Mm-hmm. And just today we're hearing only now that the U.S. is, or that the U.K. is beginning to, consider stemming travel from that country. So, what is the truth about who had started, stemming influx from these countries and
Phil, I want to ask you a question. Do you really think, because, conspiracy theorists and I don't always get along, but do you really think that that if that was happening in Britain and France, we wouldn't know about it? Some reporter wouldn't pick up on it? Somebody wouldn't have squealed?
Yeah, I would think so, and I hadn't heard anything, but I didn't have at the time anything contrary to say. I can't say, well, you're wrong, obviously, because you're always wrong.
He's your father. Yeah, he's your father.
And then the other question is, given what we're talking about already now, you've got the fact that folks are showing up and they don't, they're not detectable as having Ebola, but then a few days later, suddenly we find out they had it.
That's terrible.
And
terrible.
And so, how do we even deal with it?
Well, I told you, the only way to do it, I told you with the last guy, is you're going to have to stop letting people come back and forth with certain countries to begin with. I'll tell you now, and I bet you anything they'll do it. Even though there will be a tremendous airline hoo-ha-ha, that they're going to lose money and go out of business. That's the way it is. Hey, Phil, thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Brian in Saratoga. Number two is not there anymore. Brian in
Saratoga. Hi, Alan.
Go.
Yeah, just to chime in, Alan, you know, I heard Roundtable this morning.
Yep.
And, why don't we just restrict travel from those three countries and the neighboring countries in Africa right now? Let's worry about America and Americans.
Doctor?
You know, I'm not... Please. Thank you, Doctor.
Doctor, go ahead.
I can't say as I disagree with you. I think probably if we see more of this, that might happen.
Yeah. No, I think you get the first couple of cases. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a house in Saratoga. My wife's a nurse down in New York City at one of the big hospitals.
Interesting.
I'll tell you, the nurses are frightful about this whole thing.
I don't blame them. I would be, too, if I were there.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, there's a reason why the virus is studied in biosafety level 4 conditions in this country.
Biosafety level 4 conditions.
Yes.
I like it. And of course, they now have a watcher in Atlanta, which is apparently way ahead of everybody else, but wasn't really prepared for what was going to happen. They have a watcher for every healthcare worker who puts the uniform on and does this. They have somebody watching them to say, don't do that, which is interesting. Brian, and I love the fact that you've helped us with the fact that your wife, who is at a major medical institution, says that the nurses are all scared. I would be scared.
Yes. And also, one more thing, congratulations on the fun drive, of which I was one of the participants.
Well, thank you, Brian. We love you for that. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Yeah, bye. Okay, let's go to Amy in Queensbury, where everybody plays by the rules. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just visiting with family members last Saturday, and one family member recently graduated from college and is now an RN in a local hospital. Ebola came up in conversation, and I looked across the table and said, what's the protocol in your hospital for Ebola? And she said, there isn't one.
Yeah, there will be.
Yeah, well...
What's it going to take for there to be one in place? Does it have to be...
A patient.
Epidemic, levels for people to start getting it together here? It's crazy.
Yeah, I'd like to correct a little bit of a misconception. So emergency rooms everywhere run into infectious disease all the time, every day. And a lot of the protocols for Ebola are the same as for any other infectious disease. You isolate the patient and you protect yourself. You wear gloves, you wear a mask. And that is basically what you would do for Ebola as well, with a few additional precautions.
And even in the little hospitals, we have a wonderful little hospital in Great Barrington, Fairview. There used to be, I don't know if it still is, a sign on the wall when you come in saying, if you have, temperature and, a cough or something like that, and then it tells you what to do. And I don't remember what that is.
Yeah, and they have those posted all over Albany Medical Center as well. The same kind of thing. If you're running a fever and you have a cough, put on a mask.
Yeah,
And it's infection control is very, very similar for even the really nasty diseases, because you're basically trying to prevent transmission.
Well, Amy in Queensbury, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's go to our friend Don in Great Barrington. Don.
Good afternoon. So what about the waste product from the Ebola host?
A huge issue, Don. I was reading about it in the Times this very day. And the question is, do you flush that stuff down, the toilets?
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. Everything in that kind of an isolation protocol would be autoclaved before it was taken anywhere. Basically, it's a pressure cooker.
Oh.
So, yes, it kills everything.
But, of course, Don, before they came to the hospital, maybe they were putting something down the toilet.
Exactamo. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Don. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Lots of free phones. Let's go to Jim in Ballston Lake. Jim, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon. I just turned on. I was listening to this conversation, and I didn't think at first that we would have to restrict people coming in from these West African countries. Then I thought about the greatest urge a person has is to live. I would think as this gets worse and worse in West Africa, you can find people who are middle class and upper middle class in those countries, whether they have symptoms or not, are going to start to flee if they have the money to Europe, the United States, and other places.
Good point.
And so I think it's just a matter of when we're going to restrict people coming in.
No, but I think that's a very good point. There's always the Department of Unintended Consequences, as you point out.
Even if people think that they've been exposed— And, you know, the normal thing is, you know, let's so I don't want to spread it around the world, but if you need to do that, you think to save your life, get to the United States and get to a good hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than die in some, you know, understaffed hospital in Africa.
Very good point. Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in on the conversation now are, after this next call, 100%. All right. Which is another way of saying one person. We're down to Lisa. Go, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I just wanted to say that, you know, we have known about this since February, March. And just a month ago, the WHO said that you know, these countries in Africa were not asking for help. We didn't really need to give much help. Now I'm hearing some of the listeners saying we should restrict travel, and maybe we should. But every time that's brought up, there's someone who says, but then we wouldn't be able to get supplies into the countries.
Oh, no, you could, as our guest, as our wonderful guest, Karen, told us, you can always charter planes. Which
what I've been saying all along. This is a worldwide emergency. People have been dying in Africa. Obviously, if we think that it's important enough, we can get supplies in, we can send helicopters. Now I'm hearing that we are sending helicopters.
Sure, drones.
So, you know, that's my point. The other thing is I did email this morning on the roundtable, and I was, I'm sure, correct when I said that Thomas Eric Duncan was, he was asked whether or not he wanted the serum from the healthcare worker who had gotten better, and the hospital had communicated with that gentleman, and they didn't follow up on it. Then all of a sudden, when the nurse got infected, now she's getting the serum, and serum has nothing to do with blood type.
Okay, wait a second. Now we go to the expert. Expert.
Okay.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so the serum of a convalescent person, somebody who's had the disease, would be full of antibodies against the virus, one would hope. However, those antibodies are only helpful in the early stages of the disease process.
So you got to catch them early.
Yeah, once you have, you know, passed a certain point where you're loaded with virus, the antibodies aren't going to help anything, unfortunately.
I see. So the fact that he was turned away from the hospital really did probably cost him his life.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Lisa.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, dear. Okay. Let's go to another Lisa. Yes, another Lisa in Warwick. Okay, Lisa, go.
Yes, another Lisa. Well, you know, I have concerns about air travel in general because, you know, it's just like they had mentioned in a report about, you know, the gentleman who died in Texas. They said, you know, well, the ambulance that brought him in was back in use within 24 hours. And you wonder, you know, if you knew you were traveling in the same ambulance, you got to be a little nervous about that. And then I'm thinking air travel. I mean, I don't know what they do with airplanes. Each trip goes to the same place, or do they switch them out, you know? And I'm traveling to Asia in a couple of weeks, and I'm nervous about it.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't go if I were you. But in all honesty, there is this whole issue. You now bring up the issue, and we want to ask our distinguished microbiologist about this, as to whether or not, you know, there's a potential for this virus, which we keep getting told, vomit and sweat and this kind of thing, can go airborne.
Right. And if
Let's go to her. Okay, go ahead. Karen.
Yeah, I don't think that's really known at this point.
That's
I think there's a bit of controversy, even amongst the scientific community, as to whether or not, I mean, airborne in terms of things like flu and chickenpox, no.
Yeah.
But because you've got a lot of fluids, you will have, you know, kind of a potential for splash, let's say.
Well, I don't know. You know, Roselle and I were very lucky. We were at Tanglewood this summer, and we got seats A8 and 9. Which was right in the front, and Joshua Bell was playing the violin right above us, and he was sweating. Now, let's assume some of that sweat fell on us, and he had Ebola. Could that be transmitting the disease?
Well, I can't say no, and basically I'm not a clinician either, so that doesn't help much. But I would say the chances would be fairly slim. Mm-hmm. Particularly if he is well enough to play the violin as well as he does.
He plays pretty well.
Yeah, if he was carrying him out the amount of virus where you'd actually
gave that scenario.
Yeah.
Because of this idea of sweat transmissible sweat.
Right.
You know what
so,
I mean?
So
because they don't let anybody hug the dead ones in some of these African countries, which is apparently the way they do things, and because they don't want any of that stuff rubbing off on them.
Right. But that, again, as when somebody dies of Ebola, they are completely
really
loaded
viral.
With virus.
Yeah.
And the virus is still infectious at that point.
Okay, great. Thanks. Lisa, thank you.
Okay.
Let's go to Edward in Poughkeepsie. Edward, you're on.
Can you hear me, Alan?
We can.
Okay, thank you. You're doing a good job with Medical Monday and all that. Now, what I wanted to ask your honorable guest, this is not a new virus, and it's not a West African virus. I don't know if you're familiar, back in 1990, I think, an epidemiologist by the name of Laurie Garrett did a wonderful job on a volume called The Coming Plague. Doctor, you were aware of that?
Yes.
Book? Okay. And you know that it broke out in what was formerly called the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now it was formerly called Zaire. And that strain of the virus was called Ebola Zaire. And it also broke out in Sudan, where it was appropriately called Ebola Sudan. And then a third strain broke out called the Marburg virus. And the photographs of these things are fascinating, the beautiful simplicity and deadliness. It looks like it's been referred to as a shepherd's crook. I don't know, you know, you've probably seen that in your research.
Oh, yeah, they are actually very pretty.
Okay, Edward,
viruses.
You got to get to the point. Go ahead.
Well, Alan, I think, you know, I agree with Laurie Garrett's book. The unbridled population growth in the 70s when it broke out, and she wrote the book in the 90s, the population of the Earth was less than 4 billion people. It is now 7 billion, and there's massive, massive fragmentation of land.
I've been thinking about that myself, Edward.
All the natural barriers. And at that time, Laurie Garrett did not identify bats as the reservoir. She said there were mice and rodents that fed along the riverbanks. And when the populations grew in Africa and they had these great farms, they went into the tributaries of the Nile for water.
Right.
And these rodents came along and said, well, you know, we've got all this corn here. You know, why bother with the grains and so on? And they brought the virus with them.
Okay. And
that's what happened.
Is there a question?
No.
I
have a comment. I just made my point.
You did, Edward, and very well done. Thank you so
much. Alan, thank you so much, and I hope you have epidemiologists on Medical Monday.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, you take care.
Let's go to Moya in Cooperstown. Moya, great to hear your voice, I hope.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. I have a comment.
Okay.
Which I am agreeing that you have to prevent flights from these companies or countries coming in unless the people who are checking check the passports. Because when we had the hoof and mouth disease, I know of two doctors who were bragging that they didn't have to walk through the solution they had to kill the germs from any hoof and mouth or anything else that would infect the animals. And if you infect the animals, what are you going to eat?
Okay, doctor?
Well, fortunately, Ebola only has the disease, the ability to infect and cause disease in humans and non-human primates.
So far.
So most, they've been keeping track of whether or not dogs and cats these affected areas are infected.
There's at least one dog put down because of this. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, so the what seems to be the case is if they are getting infected, they're not getting sick. And if you're not getting sick, you're not going to transmit the disease with this virus.
So, Moya, let me understand how this happened. In your memory of the foot and mouth disease, everybody had to take basically a shower before they went on the plane?
No. Coming back from England, Scotland, Ireland, they were asked to walk through a solution that would clean their shoes.
Oh, shoes.
Because that disease, you know, is we were told to not let anyone go park near the barn. You know, it's buried in the soil and tires and whatever. And I understand this is different. But what I'm saying is that these people lied about where they had been.
Oh, sure.
And we're bragging that, we didn't walk through
Sure. And I'm just fascinated by your story because that was hoof-in-mouth disease. And I've always wondered if there was anything for foot-in-mouth disease, which I do all the time. Moya, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com and on Facebook. Taft Farms Great Barrington, celebrating autumn with pick-your-own pumpkins, hayrise, corn maize, and children's hay maize, apples, bakery and deli, hearty mums, gourds, plus locally grown pesticide-free produce. TaftFarms.com. In the Montessori School of the Berkshires, working to foster independence in an experimental learning environment, rolling admissions for toddler program through eighth grade. BerkshireMontessori.org.
One 1-800-348-2551. Two phones up, three phones down. You know, you have your choice to do it now if you want to get in on our Ebola conference with Dr. Karen Deuce, who is a distinguished professor in this area. And now's your chance. Okay, let's go to Julie in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Julie, you're on.
Thank you very much, Alan. And I love listening to your guest today. It's absolutely fascinating. What I'm calling about it is a comment. We've known about Ebola in the Western world since the 70s.
Right.
But here, all of a sudden, it's something we need to do something about now that it's touching us. It's killed millions in Africa, and nobody's really been particularly concerned about that.
That's right.
Until now, it is touching us.
That's right.
So it could have been stopped or managed, or at least have things put into place a long time ago had anybody wanted to put the investment in that.
Okay, now I don't want to seem impatient. Your point is...
My point is, now we're worried about Ebola, now that it's touching us,
right.
And we want to close down and, go into an isolationist mode, as opposed to not necessarily opening up the doors, but now we're going to put in everything so that we're helping us. I'm just saying this could have been prevented a long time ago.
Short-sightedness. Julie, as we always say, coulda, woulda, shmoulda.
You're right.
The answer is, what do you want to do now, Julie?
What do I want to do now?
Yeah.
I think there should be absolutely screening at the border,
yep.
Maybe even possible quarantine stations at
right.
the border, mm-hmm. Very much like we do our pets when we have to travel there. Yes.
The Queen can't bring the dogs.
You're right. You can't take a dog to England, and maybe even having like quarantine stations coming through from that. Becoming an isolationist against this, I don't think it's going to help. But definitely ramping up for doing some blood testing and coming up with that sort of thing, or whatever would help to screen that out.
Sort of blood test
having people stay 2 or 3 days.
Julie.
Yes.
So you would blood test everybody who comes through from those countries?
No, but why? But why couldn't there be part of that plan at this point if we're going to do this?
Okay.
To have something like a quarantine station for them to stay in.
Got it.
24.
Got it.
Okay.
It came around twice, and I thank you so much for the call.
Okay.
All good thinking. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Katja in Kingston. Katja in Kingston, you're on.
Hi. I was calling with something kind of more of a comment than a question.
Okay.
I was calling because about sort of a comment made a few callers back about, you know, why hasn't Obama done anything yet, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wanted, it just made me think, it seems like, you know, no matter what he would, no matter what
right.
he does, someone's going to have some sort of outrage about it. And so, and I know you believe that we are going to have to restrict flights, right?
I do.
So, but if we do that, it just seems that there'll be some sort of outrage, you know, about
yes.
about restricting flights and those
there
kind of
be.
Things.
There will be.
And I also just want to say that I think the whole thing has been blown out of proportion in a way. I mean,
ooh.
Obviously, it is so sad, people, you know, dying of this disease, but...
But Katja, they're talking about 10,000 people. The head person in charge of this is not talking about, the projection is 10,000 people, what, a week? Something like that. Incredible.
In America?
No, abroad. But don't think, Katja, that it's not going to get here. It will get here.
Oh, no, I believe that, that is definitely a possibility. But, I mean, this is no more infectious than, you know, the flu.
No, in fact, the flu is more infectious, and we've heard that from our distinguished guests. You want to
check? Oh, yes, much, much more infectious.
Yeah, much more infectious. Katja, can I ask a question? What grade are you in?
I'm in 12th grade.
Well, good for you, and congratulations. You make great sense. Appreciate your call. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's go to Dawn in Sheffield. Hiya, Dawn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Actually, this was a question, and it's something that I'm actually curious about because I was an HIV/AIDS educator, and I'm finding that I wanted to ask why we think that our responses now are so vastly different than when HIV was first identified and people were concerned about it coming over, because a lot of the things that we were bringing up and about Ebola and its spread are very true of HIV and its spread, and that seems to have kind of been left out of the news.
Okay, good question, Dawn. I'm just trying to get everybody in. Doctor?
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're right. We tend to rather ignore infectious diseases as long as they have not yet reached our shores.
Mm-hmm.
And the same was true of HIV.
But when they did reach our shore, I think Dawn's point is, we didn't do right by those folks. And this hasn't even reached the shore, and we're making all kinds of contingency plans.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps maybe we learned a lot from HIV.
Yeah, that's possible.
And hepatitis C now as well.
But I think maybe behind Dawn's question is that we may be discriminating against certain groups, and when it's more heterogeneous, we don't. Is that right, Dawn?
That's some of it.
Yeah.
But I found it interesting when we're talking about closing flights and our concern about it becoming airborne and all these things. This sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, you're right. It does.
Dawn, thank you for the call. Appreciate it
very
much. Okay, let's go to Tony in Kingston. Tony, you're on.
Hey, Alan. How you doing?
Good.
I'm a chiropractor in the Kingston area, and basically I'm concerned about, I work with people by using my hands to actually work on their bodies every day. And I wondered if the doctor could comment, besides screening for whether or not they have flu symptoms or a fever, and also using a hand sanitizer between visits, between patients, are there any other recommendations that you could have for me around how to protect myself and my staff from any infection?
Well, you can wear a mask. That will help decrease any kind of airborne transmission.
The dental assistants are always doing that. Yeah.
And at this time of year, you should be worried about the flu.
Yeah. How about those things that the Chinese guys or the sushi guys wear? You know, the little thin. They give them a ticket if they're not wearing it. The little thin gloves, plastic gloves.
Yeah, I think most people that I don't know about a chiropractor, but I know most people that work around any kind of potential blood or body fluid are now wear gloves, and that basically came into be with the HIV epidemic.
Now, clearly, Tony, you don't want to do that. I know that. On the other hand, those may turn out to be some of the choices.
Yeah, and you're right. And the body fluid that I am in contact with at times is sweat, of course.
Right.
So I am concerned about it.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for answering the question.
Tony, thanks a lot. Okay.
All right.
Let's go to James in Monroe. James Monroe, I know we've heard from you before, James. Go ahead.
You gave me a good nickname.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the fun driver. I contributed to... I have a statement. This is why we should have a national health program with the hospitals, where a regional coordinator could be set up things where we won't have to, if there is an epidemic breakout, it'll be taken care of, and you won't have to have the Army come in and start martial law.
Doctor?
Actually, a lot of that is in place because of the flu.
Yeah, and not only that, but there's a lot of talk now about transporting people to regional centers.
Yes.
And, you know, in other words, you got a place like Atlanta, which is apparently terrific, and even they could hardly contain it and do their job.
It don't seem like it worked good down in that hospital where the patient died.
Texas, that's right. Hey, James, thanks. I'm going to try to get everybody in here. Let's go to Jason in Del Mar. Jason, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm worried about Ebola, but I think it's something that can be managed. If we wash our hands, if we isolate people. But what I'm more worried about is a government over-response that can restrict freedoms and impact the economy negatively.
Oh, that's going to happen. No question. You start telling the airlines they can't fly somewhere, that's going to do it. And, you know, so what specifically do you worry about in terms of government over-response?
I worry about just that, restriction on people's freedoms.
No, but you got to tell me what restrictions you're worried about.
Freedom to move about freely, freedom to associate with other people. Maybe they'll be quarantining people that really don't need to be quarantined.
Yep.
I think there's a real possibility of a government overreaction.
Do you think that Korematsu versus the United States, you think Korematsu putting Japanese into restraining camps, concentration camps during the Second World War was an overreaction?
Yes, definitely.
So
the government has a history of underreaction or overreaction, but never really the correct response.
Just right. Jason, thank you. Interesting point. Let's go to Peggy in Queeman's Hollow. Okay, Peggy, you're on.
Okay, hi. Just the question I was concerned about is the government's playing down, saying John Q. Public really doesn't worry. It's not that easy to catch. It's not that contagious. And yet they quarantined the ambulance that the person rode in.
Mm.
And if they're worried about sweat transmission, what about someone who goes to a gym when he's just catching it?
From the Department of We Don't Know, right, Doctor?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. You know, the ambulance was probably decontaminated. Those protocols are well known. Mm. They're well understood. All healthcare workers know how to decontaminate. I do it myself regularly in my laboratory where I have HIV and flu.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Wow. I shook hands with you when you came in. So, Peggy, you got an answer?
No,
she just said that
the
ambulances will be decontaminated.
And you'll notice that they have, at most gyms, they have a lot of those little wipe things that you can decontaminate the equipment before and after you use. In fact, a lot of gyms ask you to do that. You've used a piece of equipment, please wipe it down. There's a reason for that. Those actually have a lot of little detergent things in them that will, again, take care of these little envelope viruses very, very quickly.
So that would be sufficient for something like
We don't know.
Yes, it probably would be.
Well, it could help, but the answer is, Peggy, and I think this is something we have to emphasize over and over again, we don't know.
Right.
There's all kinds of things that are happening now that we don't know about. So you just got to assume you know what you're talking about. But it's going to be quite risky. And you know, when something like this begins, I often talk about my going into the park with my mother in the 1950s and being told not to drink out of the water fountains because of the polio epidemic. And we didn't know then either. So once you don't know, that creates havoc. Right, Doctor?
Yes.
Yes, that's true.
And the other thing is that they've opined that it might have been initially by bats or from bats.
Yep.
Therefore, it seems that maybe other animals can carry it.
The actual natural source of the Ebola infection, the reservoir, as they call it, where the virus kind of lives in an animal but doesn't make the animal ill, isn't really known at this point. Bats are a prime suspect because they have been found to harbor the virus and not look to be ill. But in terms of any other animals, I think It's not, again, it's one of those things in the black box yet.
Somebody pointed out this morning, somebody said that that bats were flying rodents, and of course somebody else pointed out they're not, they're mammals, right?
Yeah, and I know I did a little reading this morning because I listened to the roundtable as well, and it seems that if you want to study Ebola virus infection in a rat or a mouse, you actually have to change the virus a little bit, so they don't naturally get the disease either.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Interesting, because it was a great piece in the Times about how the rats are winning. The multiplication of rats are winning, particularly in New York City. Amazing.
Yeah, I don't believe that at this point you need to worry too much about rats having Ebola.
Okay, Peggy, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Right, and let's go to Elizabeth in Montgomery, New York. Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm worried about the cost of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're cutting back on women's care, especially for younger women who are prone to a more virulent type of cancer, breast cancer, and saying they don't need this, they don't need that. And they're getting it at later stages. And you hear it all the time of people who are, you know, are suffering because of this. And who's paying for this? Who's paying for all of this? Did that man who came in from Liberia and died in Texas, did he have health insurance? Who's paying for all these
Well,
things?
Okay, your plaintiff whale is, who is paying for all of this? And
right.
we know that your basic premise is correct. Somebody's going to have to pay for it, and
right.
And it may be outrageous that the citizenry will have to pick up the tab for it. But
right.
What would you have us do, Peggy? Elizabeth.
Well, I don't know, but when a person lies and says they haven't been anywhere, and you find out they've been in somewhere,
Elizabeth.
And then they become sick, I think that's a serious problem.
Yeah, it
you know,
is.
Someone said to me that he has a case against the hospital. And I said, well, I think the country will have a case against him because he didn't tell the truth when he entered this country.
So do you want to increase, Elizabeth, the penalty for lying in your customs report?
Well, I think so, especially when there's an epidemic. And, you know, this is how actually the plague spread, because people ran out of the cities where it was, you know, they didn't know they were infected. They ran out and spread it throughout the countryside.
Yeah.
So there's a long history of not telling the truth and running away and then giving it to people who are just innocent victims.
Okay, well, listen, I understand what you're saying. On the other hand, yes, it's going to cost. No two ways about it. Yes, people will lie. Yes. But our issue is, of course, that we don't know what to do about that now.
I know we don't know. I know. And we cut back on other kinds of
good point.
Care. So that's what I get upset about.
Well, you have every right to be upset about that. Elizabeth, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Telephone number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, doctor, we have a couple of seconds to sum all of this up. So, first of all, from the department of we don't know, Karen, we don't know, right? I mean, we think we know a lot about this virus, but we don't know everything we should.
No, but I can assure you that there are people that at the CDC and researchers that in labs that had been studying this previously who will now be probably studying it even more. And we have a lot of methodologies in play, molecular methods that will help us learn a lot about this virus very quickly now that it's come to our attention. HIV is now one of the most studied viruses there is, thanks to the fact
that there was a political impetus to do that. In other words, somebody had a demand to get done, and they did. Okay, very, very quickly, Steve in Chicopee. You're on, Steve. You've got to make it fast. We're about to leave. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? Just tuned in. Didn't know if the transmission rates between species, didn't hear anything about that. What's the probability that it can mutate? And if it does, what are the protocol? What's the symptoms
okay,
for that?
Steve, I wish we had another 3 hours. You're the last call. Go ahead, Karen.
At this point, we don't really know. Viruses do mutate, some quickly, some not so quickly.
Oops. All right. Go ahead.
The fact that this virus generates overwhelming disease suggests that it doesn't need to mutate.
Yeah.
It's doing fine just the way it is.
By itself.
Yes, and viruses tend not to mutate unless they absolutely have to.
Sharon, thank you for that. We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to the two people who left on the line. I'd also like to thank Professor Karen Deuce for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specialize in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Bistro 63 at the Monkey Bar, downtown Amherst, offering casual lunches and dinners featuring steak, seafood, cocktails, and wines using local organic products, banquet facilities, and patio dining. Bistro63.com. Washington County Tourism, featuring fall foliage, covered bridges, performing arts, and outdoor activities including apple and raspberry picking, hiking, biking, floating, fishing, and exploring Washington, New York County.com. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. Remember, the conversation continues online at wmc.org/foxpop. Our engineer has been the magnificent Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by the equally magnificent Bruce Herbach. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall, a real hero around here. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. Thank you, Karen.